ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Webb, and this is the fourth and final Boyer Lecture for 2023. So far, Professor Michelle Simmons has led us on a whistle-stop tour through the quantum revolution, including how well-placed Australia is to build a quantum computer and the mindset we need to cross the finish line. To finish the series, Professor Simmons offers us a very personal reflection on education, truth, and the human condition. She's leaving the physics almost completely behind and pushing the boat out. The doubt boat. Here's Michelle Simmons with The Importance of Doubt.
The 2018 Australian of the Year is Professor Michelle Simmons.
When I was made Australian of the Year in 2018, I wasn't at all prepared for what followed.
This is an amazing moment.
Stepping from the ceremony into the glare of the media spotlight was like nothing I'd ever experienced. I found the cameras confronting. I was embarrassed to be on show. I couldn't get my head around the need to communicate in small 10-second sound bites, and I was completely perplexed by some of the questions I was asked. Do you believe in God? Should Australia be a republic? What's your take on Australia Day? Do you find it easier to talk to your children about quantum physics or sex? Being a physicist is not an ideal background for this sort of thing. We're trained to analyse physical systems, not to influence human ones. That's as it should be too. When I hire someone onto my research team or into my company, I don't ask myself, could this person stand in front of 500 people and inspire them? No, I want to know if they can work in ultra-high vacuum, if they can write control code for a scanning tunneling microscope, and if they can perform a high-frequency RF measurement. I want hard skills. And when I study a problem on my own account, my starting point is never what I need to say or do to convince people I'm right. It's to wonder about what we can measure and quantify, what variables we can systematically control, and whether I can trust in my own beliefs. I want truth, not rhetoric. The world is rather different from this. Indeed, my impression is that the world at present has quite a complicated relationship with the truth. And you don't need to have had your 15 minutes of fame to appreciate this. There are philosophers who've taught us that truth is relative. The media has convinced us that the truth is just a narrative. One hears phrases like, well, that's just your truth, as if truth is a matter of personal preference, when it obviously isn't. Although you can always disagree with someone about what you both think the truth is likely to be. All of this troubles me. Physics simply cannot proceed without the idea of the truth. I'm not sure a society can really function properly without it either. But I'm also not sure what's to be done about it. Because, as a physicist, while I value truth intensely, I also equally value doubt. This may seem a strange thing to say. Most people associate physics with certainty and the wider human tapestry with doubt. Yet in my experience, people don't like doubt one little bit, whereas physics is heavily dependent upon it. I long ago learned the vital importance of doubt for scientific discovery and technological progress. And during my year as Australian of the Year, in and out of the media spotlight, where people seem to expect such certainty and self-certainty, I gained an appreciation of how little room there is now left in our society for doubt. Even less room, arguably, than there is for the truth. It is sometimes said that if there is a crisis of truth in our society, the only way to fix it is through education. I'm not so sure about that either. A good education does teach truth, but our knowledge will always be imperfect. and it's hard to be taught a truth without it also hardening you. We're all prone to dogmas, which is why the educated mind is, in some ways, a caged mind. To be open to new truths, to be willing to change one's mind when you realize that something you once thought was true is actually false, you also need room for doubt. This is why I believe the difference between a good education and a great education is not truth, but doubt. A good education serves three purposes. First, it imparts knowledge. It explains what others have already discovered, shines light on reality as we currently understand it, and helps us to make sense of the world. And although the best knowledge is universal, the effect is always personal. Because what you know shapes who you are and what you're capable of. You can't be a quantum physicist without a certain amount of mathematics. So our knowledge is the bedrock from which we launch our lives. Second, a good education teaches skills. Ideally skills that are useful for the benefit of the individual and for our society. When I hire staff into my research group or my company, one of the more obvious things I look for is skill. Not just what a candidate knows, but also what they can do and what they would bring to our venture. And if a candidate doesn't have the specific skills we need, I look to see what other skills they've learned. Coding, maths, touch typing, design, public speaking, statistics, critical thinking, the ability to communicate complicated concepts, a sporting prowess, or the ability to play a musical instrument. Because a demonstrated capacity to learn and develop skills is itself a useful skill. Third, a good education also instills social standards, or what might be termed positive conformity. By this, I mean it instructs people on how to behave. This is one of the underappreciated benefits of attending school. You acquire the habits of institutional life, conscientiousness, and the manners to get on with others. When this is done well, i.e., when it's constructive and not stifling, it gives you an understanding of how to succeed in the world that is just as important as anything else you might pick up in the classroom. But is this enough? A great education gives much more than knowledge, skills, or good habits. At a fundamental level, it teaches you to take responsibility for your own truth. I love that phrase. It's a line from one of history's greatest physicists, Richard Feynman. And those of you who listened to my last lecture may remember him. But it might equally have been spoken by Socrates or Martin Luther. All three of these men argued, in different ways and at different times, that individuals should take responsibility for their own understanding of the world. All realized that truth is not something to be received or taught, but something to be discovered, and something for which everyone has a unique personal responsibility. The problem is that to discover truth, you must be prepared to doubt and to question authority. That's hard, and it's getting harder. Some of you may know that the motto of the Royal Society in London is Nullius in Verba. Take nobody's word for it. This is the ethos we try to put into practice every day in my laboratory, but it's not an easy thing to live by. Nowadays, the world is full of people who possess an absolute certainty in their own opinions. Political positions and value judgments are increasingly laid out as incontrovertible truths. And the social pressure to think the same way as everyone else is more intense than I can ever remember. Partly, I suspect the heightening of this phenomena has been driven by social media, which is rendering our public conversations increasingly shrill and concerned less with truth and more about being seen to be right. For me, social media is much like a pipeline of intellectual destruction that converts little fragments of knowledge into perceptions of absolute certainty, and doing so as effortlessly as water flowing down a drain. But this is not the whole story. There has been a movement across society and in educational circles that is more interested in the promotion of self-esteem and empowerment than in the measurement of competence or the discovery of knowledge. As a consequence, I sometimes wonder whether we live in a time and place where we are not allowed to have doubts anymore. And I struggle deeply with that, because as a woman, and as a person who had a pretty ordinary education growing up, and above all, as a physicist, I am a professional doubter. Doubt is essential for physics. It is the seed from which the whole discipline grows. Think about this for a moment. Those who feel certain about things tend not to question them. Why should they? On the other hand, those who are doubtful are often deeply compelled to question things. Doubt does a much better job than certainty in stimulating our curiosity, which is the great wellspring of science, indeed of all truth-seeking. This is one reason I think it is so important for adults to spend time with children, especially young children. We all know that children tend to have curious and open minds. And my suspicion is that this is because they have not yet become seduced with too great a certainty in their own knowledge. Self-doubt can also make us rigorous. To be successful in physics, especially experimental physics, you've got to expect the worst. Disasters happen and details matter. Being thorough is absolutely vital, because reality is a hard taskmaster. You simply can't rely on luck. But what drives someone to take the trouble of being systematic, to test and retest their equipment, to question the meaning of their data over and over again, even when they think they know what it says? And what keeps someone in check so they can almost instinctively avoid jumping to conclusions? Many things are important in all this. Good training, a fierce work ethic, attention to detail, patience, technical proficiency, and the desire to discover the truth. But self-doubt fuels all of these things as well. It is a motivator for training, for working harder, for paying closer attention. Which is why I say, so long as it doesn't demoralize anyone to the point where they give up, doubt is essential for scientists and for society. Personally, I learnt this the hard way. In my family, growing up, there was a strong expectation that the women would look after the men. Each week, I had to do the ironing for my father and brother. I grew up in a culture that did not necessarily promote self-confidence in its women. I also went to a rough school in South London, where learning was something of a miracle for any of us. Boy George was our most distinguished alumnus, although he was expelled for wearing a bin liner instead of his uniform. To give you a sense of the place, in my year of about 200 to 300 students, only 16 did their A-levels, the equivalent of our higher school certificate, and only two of us passed. By the time I made it to university, self-doubt was part of who I was. So much so that when I arrived, I went to see my lecturer just to check there hadn't been some mistake in my admission and that I really belonged there. Then later, at Cambridge as a postdoctoral fellow, I came up against the perception that women couldn't do physics. This was a view openly, and at times discourteously, expressed by male colleagues. Today, as education expands from its traditional aims in the diffusion of knowledge to encompass new goals relating to empowerment and the promotion of self-esteem, my past experiences would be regarded as woefully inadequate. Yet I rarely feel that way. Indeed, in one important respect, I feel lucky. Because being the recipient of such a chaotic education taught me to question myself constantly, to doubt my own knowledge and my own beliefs. And although I haven't always valued this, I appreciate it now because being able to doubt freely and without reservation is a gift. I only wish more people felt the same way, especially women, who are so often advised to hide their doubts. In my world of quantum physics, As many will know, there are very few women, less than 5%. Many people have speculated about why this should be so, but no one really knows the answer. It's a situation that persists despite a widespread and desperate contemporary desire amongst both male and female physicists to change it. So, I don't believe it can be explained simply as a function of male prejudice, although I may be wrong. Intriguingly, I've observed in my own students and colleagues certain differences in the way men and women learn and think. These aren't differences in ability, but differences in inclination, interest, and especially in confidence. Above all, I'd say that women in general are much more likely to doubt themselves than men are. Whether that's cultural or just the way we are, who knows? I don't think it matters either way. What does matter is that an excess of self-doubt can be very discouraging for young women choosing which subjects to study. What usually happens in these circumstances is that we conclude that self-doubt must be a liability and that we should do everything in our power to foster confidence. We try to find ways, some direct and some more surreptitious, to convince women not to doubt themselves. We show them role models. We try to pump up their self-assurance. I know from personal experience just how this feels. I had an uncle, now sadly deceased, my Uncle Tony, who lived in America. When I was a teenager and he sensed that I was doubting myself, he would tell me to stand in front of a mirror and to say to myself, "Hot damn, I'm good. Hot damn, I'm good." It never really worked, although to a shy English girl, using such a brash American phrase at least had the benefit of making me laugh, and humor does always help keep things in perspective. The fact is, though, that emotions are not so easily manipulated, especially those tied in with self-perception. There is no magic wand that can be waved, no incantation to recite that will dispel self-doubt. And always there's the potential for an unexpected feedback loop. The fundamental issue is that as soon as we signal to someone that they ought to have less self-doubt, we also reinforce this undesirability in their own failing for feeling that way in the first place. Could this be why so many of our targeted efforts to encourage women to study physics have failed? And why such efforts have not always been good for men either? In New South Wales, for a long time, we had a physics curriculum that was supposedly tailored to make girls more confident with the subject. It didn't work, and the education department in that state has returned to a more traditional curriculum. However, in the meantime, a generation of students came through my laboratory with a weaker grounding in the discipline than they should have had. What I say now to young women who are looking for inspiration is it's probably a mistake to try to lose something so valuable as your self-doubt. Indeed, what I would say to aspiring physicists, both male and female, is that self-doubt is not a liability, it's an asset, that you need to figure out how to control it, but that you should value it and channel it, because it will make you a better scientist. It will probably even make you a better human. Just ask yourself this: is it more important to be seen to be right or actually to be right? Is it better to win an argument or to know what the real truth is? Is it more useful to be considered good at something or actually to be good at it? And how much do you really know for certain? And just because someone, or indeed everyone, says something, does that make it true? Those who strive at the limits of human knowledge venture out into the unknown based on what is already known. In my laboratory, I've had some of the greatest experimental researchers in the world working with me, all incredibly well-educated and expert people. Our success builds upon literally millennia of prior knowledge. Our single-atom transistor came half a century after the invention of the original transistor. It came more than 100 years after the discovery of the electron and thousands of years after Democritus first conceived of the idea of atoms. Looked at retrospectively, we are experts, adding to a vast chain of learning. Every new discovery extends our accumulated knowledge. Looking to the future, though, one gains the opposite impression, for there is so much still that we don't know and may never know. The way I see things, we're still just scratching around the edges of the vast reaches of human uncertainty. One of the hardest truths to face is that we're all fundamentally ignorant. And strangely, this applies no matter how well educated you are. Indeed, it may be harder to appreciate the better educated you are. A person who tops the state at the end of year 12, or wins a university medal for their degree, or completes a PhD, may well have bucket loads of ability, dedication, and talent, but they haven't even scratched the surface of what can be known. The most educated and learned people may know a lot about certain things, but their knowledge is just a drop in the ocean of what it is possible to learn. I, myself, may be a professor of physics and a specialist in experimental quantum physics, but the number of questions I cannot answer, even in my own field, is infinite. This is just part of being human. Yet because knowledge is so important and valuable, most people see their ignorance as a weakness, as something to cover up and hide. So there is a tendency to bluster, to pretend to know when we don't, and we can achieve this by effecting agreement with the majority, or with whoever seems to have the most authority or the loudest voice. The problem here is obvious. It turns us into mere parrots of other people's ideas. It encourages us to rely on authority figures who may be wrong, and to be satisfied with repeating whatever the group thinks, which may also be wrong. It undermines critical thought. It dissuades people from speaking or even seeking the truth. This is the exact opposite of taking responsibility. There are times I've seen even this creep into my own research field in physics, where the pursuit of truth is part of the job description. When nobody wants to be wrong and everyone wants to fit in, groupthink takes hold. And when this happens, it always stands in the way of honest understanding. In science, we have checks to try to prevent this from happening. Peer reviews, systematic approaches to experimentation, an insistence on proof and empirical observation, and yet it still happens. Unfortunately, doubt of any kind is not easy to teach. Indeed, all the components of a good education mitigate it. When you are the recipient of knowledge, when you've had skills bestowed upon you, and you've been shown how to fit in, it is very hard not to desire certainty and a fixed belief in all that you've learned. As compensation for this, I wouldn't wish upon anyone the kind of wayward schooling I received, but it does raise the question, how can you preserve your doubts, that most valuable quality, even as you become more educated or expert in your chosen profession? I don't know that I have an answer to that question, but based on personal experience, I can make some recommendations. Admit uncertainty. In my field of research, in the quantum world, there is uncertainty everywhere. But the same is true of life. The things we don't know often matter just as much as the things we do. And the person who seems to know everything is frequently the first to lead everyone else astray. Even as you learn, you should make a virtue out of uncertainty. Practice humility. Our society is too firmly fixated on pumping up confidence and inflating self-worth, but humility is essential. Even the smartest and most self-righteous amongst us are ultimately limited in what they know. No matter who you are, you can't be right all the time, nor should you have to be. Sometimes the best thing you can say is, I don't know. Above all, take responsibility. Ask yourself, Will you contribute more to the world if you believe what everyone else says? Or if you take the trouble to work out your own views? This is a message for young people especially. Exercise your curiosity muscle. You should be prepared to ask your own questions and find your own answers, and to recognize that your education ultimately depends on you. There are times I wish more people would be willing to take some of these ideas on board. If you understand what I've set out, perhaps in future you will no longer be satisfied just to accept knowledge as it's given to you, but will actively search for knowledge on your own account. You may see that a true education is something that lives well beyond the confines of any institution. You won't want to acquire skills just so you can serve someone else's ends. You will master skills as a foundation for your own pathway in life. And while you may accept conformity of manner, you won't succumb to conformity of thought, but will think for yourself. Only once you've become a true friend to doubt will you start to properly take responsibility for the truth.
That formidable challenge concludes the Boyer Lectures for 2024 from Michelle Simmons. Thanks to producer Shelby Trainer, sound engineer Hamish Camilleri, and executive producer Amrutha Slee. You can hear the other lectures on the ABC Listen app, and if you head to ABC iView, you can watch the televised lecture that kicked it off. That night, I had the pleasure of leading a Q&A with Professor Michelle Simmons. Here's a snippet. You know, we always hear that you can't be it if you can't see it, but yes. You are now extremely visible.
Yeah.
Does that change things? Do you see a difference in the applications or the interest that you get for working in your company or your lab compared to other labs?
Look, I do. I do see there's more interest, and I think we've been focusing a lot on primary and secondary school to get them in at that level. And if you look at where the numbers drop, it's typically around about the age of 14 to 16. That's where the first dip happens. But then even if females get into the field, it tends to just gradually decrease as they get more and more senior. And so I don't honestly know why that happens. I wish I did, because I would try and stop it. But if you look at it, the 14 to 16-year-olds, I think girls are looking at, what's my career going to be? What am I going to do? And in general, with physics, physicists are everywhere, and so there's no one kind of career. It's not like you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer. So it's very hard to describe what a physicist is going to be, except that they can have any job. And so that doesn't normally make young females feel, oh, that's good, I'll do it then. And so there's an education in that. I think seeing female role models is actually quite important. And so if you look again, we at one point we took a photograph of our Centre of Excellence, and there were 22 professors in it, and there was only one female in the photo. And we were going to put it on the website, and that's like, you know, it's not an attractive thing for young girls to want to join that team. Yeah. And so there's lots of things that we have to be careful of with the signalling that goes out. I think in general, females don't like being up in the spotlight, so it's not something I'm very comfortable with. But I've learned that it's absolutely critical that I do this as much as possible so that girls can see it and not just see who I am, but hopefully see how much I love what I do and how much fun I have, because it is an amazing field. I mean, honestly, it's the most rewarding thing. And so I just feel about all these females missing out on all of this.
You can hear that full conversation in the next podcast episode as a special bonus. I'm Jonathan Webb. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.